Mary Jo, I like talking to you so much. If Paul ever decides to throw in the towel, I want to be on the list. I want people to be speculating about who's going to take Paul's place, and I want to be on that list.
All right, sweet.
Todd, you're dumping me. You're dumping me for Mary Jo.
Are you still there, John? Hi, welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
We're coming to you from GeekWire in Seattle, where we report each day on what's happening around us in tech, science, and innovation. What happens here matters everywhere, and every week on this show, we talk about some of the biggest and most interesting stories we've been covering. We are pleased to welcome as our guest commentator this week, Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo is a technology journalist who writes all about Microsoft for ZDNet. She's the author of Microsoft 2.0, how Microsoft plans to stay relevant in the post-Gates era. And she's also the co-host of one of my favorite podcasts, Windows Weekly, with Paul Thurrott on the Twit Network. Mary Jo, we're really excited to have you here. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Thanks for inviting me. I'm like ready to talk Microsoft.
So it was just Microsoft earnings this past week. And so we got a new glimpse into kind of the state of this company here at the beginning of 2021. Mary Jo, you've covered this company for a long time. I would love to hear how you describe the Microsoft of 2021 to somebody who might be familiar with the Microsoft of 1995 or 2005. How do you describe this company today?
I would say the current Microsoft seems like the kinder and gentler Microsoft, but don't be fooled. Satya is not the guy you think he is. He's not a pushover teddy bear.
Oh, tell us more.
You know what's funny about Satya? So I feel like he's the cultural ambassador of Microsoft right now. Like, he's the face that's painting how the company is perceived internally and externally, right? But if you ever get to talk to him one-on-one, like, I actually ran into him accidentally in the Microsoft New York office a couple of years ago, and you can get him in the weeds in a second, like talking about like APIs and Microsoft Graph, and like he knows all this stuff. He's been at Microsoft forever, and he is very knowledgeable technically and not afraid to use his knowledge.
It's funny, after he became CEO, he had been running, I think, the server and tools group for a while, and then Bing prior to that. He essentially transformed himself.
He did.
So who knew he loved poetry, right?
I mean, and cricket. He was a whole new guy.
And I'm not saying that he wasn't into those things before, but he certainly brought those things into his public persona in a way that he didn't before. Do you feel, in hindsight, Mary Jo, that he was the right pick to lead Microsoft as CEO?
So when he was chosen as CEO, I thought this was the worst possible choice they could have made. That is exactly how I felt. And after about 6 months, I was like, you know what? This was the best possible choice they could have made.
Why?
I thought he would be the worst because I thought he was just going to continue in the steps of Ballmer and not really shake things up. I thought, oh, he's a veteran Microsoft guy, and he's going to just do the same old things they've always done. And within the first 6 months of his tenure, you thought, nope, that's not what he's going to do.
Well, we saw the results of his tenure years later this past week in Microsoft's earnings. Their revenue climbed 17% to more than $43 billion for the December quarter. Profits were up 33% to $15.5 billion. And that's really the jumping off point for our discussion here today. We're going to get into all sorts of topics related to Microsoft, really do a state of Microsoft here with Mary Jo Foley.
I'm just curious, where do you see across their landscape of so many products the biggest opportunity for them?
I would still say you got to think enterprise, not consumer, right? They want to grow consumer because that's where they're weaker. But obviously the cloud, it's like kind of a very obvious answer. And also I'd say around the whole Teams becoming more of a platform and almost like an operating system in its own right. I think that is a very big area of focus and a very big area of opportunity for them. And it's funny, they didn't really talk about Teams that much on the earnings call, but I think that's just because pretty soon they're going to have some big Teams announcements, and they didn't want to let Satya accidentally spill the beans, which he's done on a couple earnings calls, we'll say.
Your most recent episode of Windows Weekly was interesting in terms of the chatter you had on what they didn't talk about on the conference calls gives clues to where they're going. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty insightful. And you also mentioned like Surface wasn't talked about very much.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because it was the holiday quarter.
And it was their biggest quarter ever for Surface, $2 billion. First time they broke the $2 billion mark for Surface. But you know what? Was that really good though? Right? Because that's your holiday quarter. You launched three new products during that quarter. One of which was kind of a weird product, the Surface Duo, not for everyone, you know, the dual screen Android phone that they don't want to call a phone. But also, you've also had a new Surface Go laptop, like a clamshell laptop, and you have a new Surface Pro X, a nice, really nice looking ARM machine, very thin, very light. So you think, okay, shouldn't those have done better during the holiday quarter? Because they'd be nice gifts, right?
I tried out the Surface Laptop Go. I got to say, I really thought it was great.
You liked it?
Relatively inexpensive.
I know.
High quality.
A nice size, 12.4, right? Like very nice, compact, mobile device.
I also did buy the Surface Duo, and we'll see if Panos picks up on this. I did decide to return it.
I gave mine back, too. I mean, we had to give them back, but I was like not in a hurry to keep it as long as I could have. I had to send it back. I thought I was going to like that more than I did.
I do want to say I literally bought mine just for the
you
record.
You paid
so
for
I,
it yourself.
I paid for it myself. Whereas review units, the ethically,
right, we have to give them back. Yeah.
I could not fit it into my life. I couldn't figure out where it fit.
No, same.
I want to go back to the Teams comment that you made really just a minute ago, because I think it's really interesting. Teams as a platform and that whole notion. And it ties actually back into the first question, because this is an area where Slack in particular would contend that Microsoft hasn't changed at all, that the stuff they were doing back in the day, bundling IE, Windows Media Player with Windows, they're basically doing that with Office 365, right? And Teams, that's what Slack contends. Where do you see Teams going long-term?
So first, let me make a little Slack comment, because I can't needle Stuart Butterfield enough to make me happy. So Salesforce is going to do the same thing with Slack as Microsoft is doing with Teams. They're going to merge it in with their platform, right? So, okay. I think that's just the way the world is going. All these things are becoming a single platform instead of separate silos. So I don't think it's weird that Microsoft's doing that. I think it's kind of like, this is the way people expect to buy software and services now. You hear executives say this from Satya on down, Teams as an operating system. So they don't mean like Windows. They don't mean it's something you're going to preload necessarily on a new piece of hardware and ship it out. It means they want your day to start in Teams and you to stay in Teams and do everything in Teams, not just chat and meetings, but also even development. Like last year, they integrated the Power Platform low code, no code tools into Teams so that people could develop inside Teams. Like you don't have to leave and come back. You could do everything in one. They have app stores inside of Teams. If you need an app, you could just go get it from the app store and you don't have to leave the environment. So they want it to become like your everything hub. This is the piece that will be on your desktop. You live in it all day. You might occasionally have to go out to do one or two things in a different app or a different service. But even if you're running a third-party service like Box or Dropbox or anything, they want there to be connectors into Teams so that you never have to leave Teams.
Do you think they're going to succeed with that? Is that a good strategy?
I think it's looking like people are buying into it. And I think the pandemic has helped that a lot, because people are living in Teams more than they might have before the pandemic. Like in the morning, they start their day, all their meetings are in Teams, all their invitations come through Teams, integration with their email directly into Teams. So I don't think it's as foreign a concept as it was even just a year ago that people would work that way.
Todd, back to my original question, I'm curious what you think is the biggest opportunity across their product lines at Microsoft.
I was going to say Teams as well. I don't mean to piggyback. That's why I went back to that. Mary Jo cited a few different things, but really you see how that is becoming the operating system of work.
I think that's a pretty big opportunity for them. In terms of other opportunities, you know, one I'm very curious if they can capitalize on, and this is outside of the enterprise, but more in the consumer space, is how do they take all the success they're having with Xbox right now, you know, $5 billion quarter in gaming, like unbelievable. How do they translate that back into productivity and services, right? Like you hook people with Xbox and then you're like, can you sell them on the idea of buying into Office as a subscription? I asked them that during the earnings call. I talked to Mike Spencer, who's the head of investor relations. I'm like, so what are you going to do with all this like great consumer momentum you have over here with Xbox? And how are you going to bring that over to the other side of the house? And he's like, so I don't know if it's, I just am asking something that I don't want to talk about, or if I'm asking something that's a dumb question. I'm not sure. But to me, that seems like an opportunity because they don't have a lot of real good momentum and mind share with consumers, at least here in the United States, I don't feel like.
I hear you on that. I tend to traditionally just think of Xbox as this other thing.
Right. And separate, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And when they acquired Mojang or Mojang, depending on who you're talking to, Phil Spencer, actually, the head of Xbox, has, I think, switched the pronunciation of that.
Pronunciation.
Drives me nuts. Anyway, when they acquired the Minecraft maker, that to me was like, okay, that's further solidifying this separate part of the company. And then is it Bethesda Softworks, the big game developer that they acquired last year? Same thing there. It almost feels like, could this eventually be spun off?
You know,
I know that's always been a discussion, but it seems like even more realistic now. Although xCloud, the cloud gaming service, Windows, different points, that tends to integrate back into Microsoft, which may actually be the answer to your question, Mary.
It might be. Right.
Just a quick point on Minecraft. Having an 11-year-old son who would spend 18 to 20 hours of his day on it if he could, I think that was such a brilliant move by Microsoft for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. Not only the strength in gaming. I got to say, my son has none of that excess baggage of what Microsoft was like being a problematic. He loves Microsoft. A lot of the reason because of Minecraft and gaming. We gave him the opportunity to purchase a stock, you know, over the last couple of years, and he purchased Disney and he purchased a share of Microsoft. Having the momentum of next generation computer users, largely brought in through Xbox and Minecraft, that is the path then to the enterprise sale, you know, probably in 15 to 20 years, frankly. And I just think it was a brilliant move.
I agree. I think at the time they did the purchase of Minecraft, everybody was like, what are they doing? Right? Like, it just seems so far afield. But then when you started considering how it could play in with their education products and services, and to your point, John, you know, like grooming the next generation to be Microsoft customers, I think that's a really legitimate way to look at it.
This gets into another point that I wanted to ask about, and that is who Microsoft should acquire next. So we're going to talk about that coming up around the corner. You're listening to GeekWire.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook. You're listening to the GeekWire podcast. Our guest this week is Mary Jo Foley, longtime technology reporter specializing in Microsoft coverage. Mary Jo, we were just talking about the Microsoft acquisitions in the Satya Nadella era. And I got to say, to the point that John was making earlier, if you compare the Ballmer acquisitions, which were so aspirational, square peg, round hole, if you think about the deals under Satya Nadella, LinkedIn, Minecraft, GitHub, and I actually would point back to LinkedIn actually as an answer to the other question of where they have opportunity if you look at the growth there in the social network. And I would contend that because it's a subscription service at a time when all of these ad-based services are under attack. Frankly, I think LinkedIn could be a bit of a refuge in the storm for a certain class of social media user and has become that at times. But if you compare the acquisitions, Nokia, Aquantiv, the disasters under Ballmer, to what's happened under Satya Nadella, I think it's a pretty stark contrast. What do you think they should buy next, Mary Jo?
Okay, first, there's one exception to this rule, which almost happened this past year. And if it had, I would have been like, okay, all bets are off. TikTok? Really?
Oh, that was ridiculous. I agree.
That was a head scratcher.
You cannot make a case for this. I'm sorry. And when we asked Chris Capasola about that on Windows Weekly, and he's like, no, it was all about the video. I'm like, oh.
That would have been a Ballmer acquisition.
That totally would have been.
I appreciate Steve B for who he is. And, you know, we did a podcast with him. I got to know him a little bit.
No, I loved him. I loved him as a CEO. He was so fun to cover.
But the numbers would suggest that he was not a great acquisition guy.
Correct.
I would
Correct.
Say.
Correct. I think that's fair. So yeah, who next? So I feel a little scared making predictions like this because sometimes, well, I don't care about being wrong, but I care more about like potentially giving leading market indicators like I might actually know something, which I don't. But I can give you categories where I think they're very likely to make other acquisitions. And security is such an obvious one, right? Like anybody who's doing any kind of cloud security, who's an established Microsoft partner, so they have a known set of patterns and they know the people who work there. I think those are very much top of mind, especially around this whole idea of zero trust. Like that is like the new hot buzzword at Microsoft around security. So if you go and do a search for cloud security vendors doing zero trust, I think any of those could be on the target list for sure.
Mary Jo, I just wrote about one today that is in the Seattle area, which was actually going to be on my potential Microsoft target list.
Oh, really?
A company called Tanium, which moved its headquarters from the San Francisco Bay Area to Seattle last year. $9 billion plus market cap.
Wow.
1,500 employees. Now, the problem with that deal is that they just struck a big deal with Google last summer. So that might tamp down the appetite, but they were actually one that was on my list.
I would actually say it wouldn't tamp down the appetite. It would make them more of a target because Microsoft loves to steal Google customers right out from under them.
On this point, it's interesting in the security realm. We were just commenting last week about how nobody was talking at all about the SolarWinds
right
attack anymore, and Satya Nadella actually brought this up.
He talked a lot about it. He did
on the call, and he said in conjunction with this was an interesting juxtaposition because these sentences were very close together on the earnings call. He explained that SolarWinds has essentially been a stark reminder of how important security is. And by the way, zero trust means you assume that no one can be trusted, and you assume that they're going to get into the network, and then you're playing defense. He, though, explained that their security revenue in their security business lines topped $10 billion for the past 12 months, up more than 40%. What did you make of that?
So I hate those kind of numbers when they do those, right? Because what they're doing is they're taking a bunch of products that they're already reporting up through other parts of the organization, and they're lumping them into this artificial category, right? Commercial cloud is kind of like that number too, right? And so they took like Azure Active Directory, Intune, Defender for Endpoint. They took all these products, Azure Sentinel, that already are reporting up through other categories, bundled them all together and said, that's worth $10 billion. So to me, that's kind of like, okay, you know. Fuzzy numbers.
Right. It's not like additive to the rest of the revenue.
No, which is how some people reported it. Like they also had $10 billion in security. I'm like, no, that's not how that worked.
Mary Jo, what else is on your list of potential or categories?
Yeah.
And then Todd and I will come up with companies in each category.
Okay.
Yeah, because
okay.
We really don't know what we're talking about. So we're not going to be giving anybody
yeah,
any
no
stock.
One, no one would, that would be really, really, really dumb.
So another kind of obvious one is artificial intelligence, right? I mean, they were buying a lot of smaller vendors in that space over the past several years. What I sometimes do is I look at the list of investments they make through the M12 venture arm at Microsoft. You know, because they're familiar with these people, they've invested in these companies, and you kind of do a cross look at it and you're like, okay, who's in AI who was part of the M12 family of acquisitions? And those might be potential targets.
Okay, this is good because I have a specific example of one that I would think they might want to acquire,
okay.
Although they've frankly already partnered so much and invested so much in this entity. I think it's a company now, it used to be an organization, that they almost don't need it to be acquired. OpenAI, the organization behind GPT-3, the advanced natural language processing model that everybody's so enamored with. But this plays into the cloud, Azure, all the AI workloads that Microsoft would want to have happen on Azure. OpenAI would not surprise me. I don't understand the behind the scenes mechanics of that deal or the ownership structure of OpenAI, but it makes sense technologically.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they bought a lot of smaller, very, very vertically focused AI companies for a while, like I think Bonsai was like autonomous technology around AI. So I think they look like that. Also, they take their, they have like 10 verticals that are they're very focused on, and they look, okay, who does AI for finance, right? Like, let's get them, right? Because then that gives us the expertise in finance. It gives us the AI technology that we can turn into blueprints to use for our customers across in other industries too. So I think they think like that. Like, let's look at the matrix of things we like and customer base we have, and how do those two things kind of fit together? Maybe I'm being too logical about how they do this. Maybe it's just spin the roulette wheel. I don't know.
Yeah, that's maybe how they do all their investment. But I think that's right. I mean, it's interesting when you think about the AI market. I mean, you've got the gigantic tech titans that are all investing in it in a huge way. And then there are a bunch of these kind of vertical AI startups. There's no one really in the middle, it seems. And so that's where it does seem like there's an opportunity for Microsoft to continue just gobbling up some of the smaller acquisitions in that realm.
Mm-hmm. And then one that's kind of related to that category is healthcare, right? Like, they continue to have a huge presence in healthcare. They mostly are doing it with partners, but because of how they're focused on using technology to improve healthcare, all the way from patients up through research, I could see them doing acquisitions that have some kind of a technology bent, but are in the healthcare space. And it's especially good press around the pandemic time, right? If you get somebody who's working in the space around vaccines and research around the pandemic, and then you also can combine that with your technology and work it into, I mean, Microsoft has a big vaccine management kind of presence and application. Microsoft Consulting built them a whole platform around that. So I think that's another area that could be pretty ripe for more acquisitions. TikTok, though? No. If Oracle has to give it up or decides, you know, we're in limbo now, I don't think Microsoft should come in as the white knight. I really, that one was just a big no.
it was so weird. And the entire Trump jumping in on that for partial attention. You know what? It's been so refreshing not talking about politics this episode. I'm just not even going to go there.
It was funny. When they were thinking about buying TikTok, one of my neighbors downstairs is a huge news junkie here. And every time a little thing happened in the TikTok saga, he would text me. And he's like, did you see what just happened with TikTok? I'm like, stop texting me about TikTok.
Well, you know, this is not an idle question. You know, Microsoft's total cash and cash equivalents were about $132 billion at the end of the quarter. And, you know, I know there's all this inflation and the company's valuations are much higher than they used to be at the time. But I remember a time when Microsoft would get up to $60-70 billion and you'd have shareholders clamoring for a $3 a share special dividend back in the day.
I know, right? Right. I mean, then you've got companies like Salesforce and like Slack who would love to get Microsoft to buy them. I mean, before, right? Not now, but there are a whole bunch of companies who are like, you know what a great exit would be? Get Microsoft to buy us. But I feel like right now, because of the pandemic, if you're Satya and Amy, you're thinking, the last thing I should be doing right now when no one's even in the office is buy a giant company and try to integrate them with us, right? It's especially hard when everybody's there, but when you're trying to like do it when everyone's virtual, I feel like a large company would be a really big thing to bite off and chew. Maybe a smaller company would be more manageable, but buying a big, huge, company in any market right now, I think would be, even though they've got the cash, it would be a lot for them to take on.
I agree with that. I think there are certain challenges to getting those bigger deals done.
Yeah.
To the flip side of that, I'll argue against myself for a second, because I think Microsoft is in a unique position in that they've kind of slid underneath all the antitrust concern that I think it's putting, this is just my opinion, but I think it's putting the brakes on some of the other companies from really maneuvering in a big way, like a Google or a Facebook or an Amazon, because they are so fearful of antitrust. I don't think they're going to do those deals, which I think Microsoft could potentially slide in there and do something and potentially get a real competitive advantage against those larger tech titans. So I think it's possible, but we'll see. That is a lot of cash to sit on, and they got to do something with it.
So Mary Jo, earlier we talked about Microsoft's biggest opportunities. Coming up next, I want to ask you about Microsoft's biggest threats and most significant competitors today, in your view. That's coming up next. You're listening to GeekWire. Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook. We are pleased to have with us this week Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo, I've followed your coverage for, gosh, when I was learning the Microsoft beat, I did a couple things. I read Michael Cusimano's book, Microsoft Secrets, and I started following your work. I can't even remember where you were reporting back in 2002. Was it eWeek? Is that right? No.
2002, maybe. Maybe. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, I've been following you since I was in middle school.
No. Trust me. At any rate, I've learned so much from you over the years just about the company and the people behind it and how it operates. So it's a real pleasure to be able to speak with you here.
Thanks, Todd.
And I also enjoy Paul, too. I love the dynamic on your show on Windows Weekly because he's such a crank.
He is such a crank.
He's a lovable crank, though, if you know him.
I call him Eeyore. So, you know, there you go.
Yes, exactly. So let's put on Paul's mentality here and get a little negative. This is more my realm.
There you go.
So what could take Microsoft down? Like, what are the biggest existential threats? Maybe not existential, but like, what are the biggest threats out there if you look at trends in business and actually competitors too? Mm-hmm. When you think about the competitive landscape, is it something like Slack and Salesforce? Is it Amazon? Like, where does your mind go?
So I'm going to make a weird call on this one, I think. I'm going to say Google.
Whoa.
And the reason I'm going to say that is a couple of reasons. One is, if you look at who are the biggest public cloud vendors, just based on, like, you know, PaaS and IaaS, right? I'm not talking about commercial cloud, that fake number. I'm not talking about that. Amazon's number one, like AWS. A very distant second is Microsoft. And then right behind Microsoft is Google, right? And so everybody kind of says, yeah, if you talk to Microsoft about Google, they're like, we never see them in deals. They don't really matter. But you know, they're a hungry number three, and they still have much more mind share with startups and market share with startups. That's something Microsoft would love to have. And they keep trying to find ways to get startups, but they can't like unlock that the way Google has. Google has a huge presence in AI and a lot of assets in there. And then they've got their secret weapon, Javier Soltero, who defected from Microsoft and went to run G Suite, which now has another name that I can never remember.
Google Workspaces or
Google Workspace or something
Space.
Like that.
Yes.
Right.
I use it and I couldn't remember the name.
Yeah, because anyway. It's one, Google and branding, they're even worse than Microsoft, and that's a low bar. So I feel like they are coming in stronger there now because he understands how to get the enterprise customers, and that's where they've been weak at Google. And you've got more kind of momentum over at Google and more focus on, you know what, we're weak in enterprise. It's almost they're the mirror image of Microsoft. Microsoft is strong in enterprise and weak in consumer. Google's strong in consumer and weak in enterprise. And if they flip that, I think they could give Microsoft a big run for their money.
Interesting. How much do you think Amazon is a threat to Microsoft?
They're always a threat, right? I mean, and the reason they're a threat is because of AWS, obviously, but also because they are investing in some really key vertical markets, which Microsoft is using to get more customers in those markets. You know, like Microsoft can say, do you want AWS competing with you, customer, or do you want us, who isn't going to be in your market, not competing with you? But I feel like because Google's doing things like autonomous driving and those kinds of sets of skills, they're building up a very substantial knowledge base in those areas that they could really build into their cloud more than they have now, and kind of have more vertical clouds and more vertical expertise sold that way instead of just selling horizontally. So I think AWS is always a threat. Not in Office apps, not in the productivity space, because they just don't have a play there really at all. But I feel like if AWS went out and I actually thought AWS was going to buy Slack. I thought that was what was going to happen. And if that had happened, then they'd be a very much bigger threat than they are now.
They've already got Chime at Amazon.
Oh, Chime.
So I got to say, I'm going to be a contrarian on this one. There was a great episode of the Screaming in the Cloud podcast with Corey talking with the executive at Amazon behind Chime. I completely misunderstood what Chime is. Chime is not a client play. Chime is not something where they're trying to get and take Zoom out. Mm. Chime is an infrastructure play. And so when you saw Amazon do that deal with Slack, the Slack video calling, in our experience, at least, we actually ended up starting to use it again at GeekWire after Chime came in, because Amazon is doing regional types of serving where it's reducing latency. Anyway, I do think that's misunderstood. I don't want to sidetrack myself there, because I really want to point this out, Mary Jo. We have a tradition on the show where we at least come up with good story ideas, and I just thought of one. And I think if you happen to want to pursue it, go for it.
We'll, okay.
You know, whatever happened to Cortana and Alexa?
Oh, man. That deal where they were going to have the integration.
I mean, I know they integrated, but then what?
Yeah. So then Cortana really changed completely. Like, I keep saying to the Cortana team, you guys need to rename this thing, because it is not the Cortana we all knew before, right? Now it's just basically artificial intelligence built into Office. That's what it has become. And it's still interesting, and it still gives them a way to test out some of the voice recognition and synthesis technologies that they're building at Microsoft. But it's not the way it was. I feel like Cortana is one of the many examples of Microsoft being early in something and looking really strong and having a nice product set and a good direction, and then they just fumble it and everybody takes over and they lose. It's like one of those quintessential examples of that.
So Amazon should have bought Slack. Mary Jo, talk a little bit more about why. Because they don't have much productivity or communication tools or...
No. I don't know if you caught this too, Todd and John, on the earnings call. They're starting to call themselves at Microsoft the leading commercial cloud vendor. I hadn't really heard them push that whole pitch. The reason Microsoft can claim to be the biggest commercial cloud vendor is because cloud is not just what AWS and Azure are, right? It also includes Office 365 and Google Workspace. It includes all these other things.
Yeah, all their enterprise apps. Yeah.
All the enterprise apps, you know, SQL on Azure, Dynamics 365. So if you add all those things that Microsoft has, they are the biggest in terms of everything that you could call a cloud service. So I think the thing Amazon and AWS don't really have is all those other things, right? They've got the public cloud. They've got that like locked up, and they're still the leader, and they have more services than everyone. And I would argue more regions, even though Microsoft would quibble with that.
That's such a weird debate. Anyway, yeah.
I know. But anyway, I think the place where AWS could really build out their cloud and add a lot more potential is by having the productivity stack, and they don't have that.
I heard you talking about that on your show. And Todd, you know what it reminded me of?
What?
Do you remember, I think this was about 18 months ago, when the executive left AWS and went to Smartsheet, which is a collaboration productivity tool.
Gene Farrell. Wow. How's that for a memory?
Yeah, Farrell's his last name. He's still at Smartsheet. It was a real hot button issue, especially here in Seattle, because you had Amazon suing a former executive going to an up and coming company. And I just thought it was fascinating. Like, why do they care that somebody's going to Smartsheet of all places? And to your point, Mary Jo, I think it's because they were showing their hand that they're going to be investing big time in productivity apps and building out that component. Now I don't know, have we even seen that with them?
It was more than 18 months ago, way more than 18 months ago. I think that might have been an aspiration at the time, and could well still be an aspiration, but I don't think you've seen it. I mean, there have been products, but I don't think you've seen any traction from Amazon. Hey, Mary Jo, we have not, in almost an hour of discussing this, talked about Windows.
I know. I was thinking that.
What does that say?
Windows, you know, it's gotten a resurgence during the pandemic, but it's not really a giant priority for Microsoft compared to all their cloud services, right?
It's kind of a commodity.
Yeah, kind of. Although, I don't know. Everybody keeps saying when Panos Panay, you know, who owned the Surface team, ended up taking over more of Windows engineering. Windows is back, baby. Like, they keep telling us that. Every time we talk to them, they're like, Windows is back, baby. I'm like, okay, well, we'll see, right?
Sounds like they're really pumped about Windows.
They're pumped. Oh, Panos Pumped Panay is pumped about Windows. No, you know what they have coming on Windows this year that is going to be very interesting is they're going to try yet again to compete with Chromebooks with something called Windows 10X. And that's going to launch, we think, this spring. They're being very cagey about when and how, but we think it'll first show up preloaded on a couple of PCs from third-party vendors. It'll be aimed at the education market and to some extent, first-line workers, you know, the people who are out in the front lines of customer support and all. So they've tried this a couple times, Windows RT, Windows 10 in S mode. They've never been able to really figure out how to take on Chrome OS and Chromebooks. But there's even the possibility they're going to have Android apps emulated on Windows in the next year or two. So I think they realize they've got to find a way to compete with Chrome. Again, if for nothing else other than to get the mind share of younger people who are in school using Chromebooks, like they need an alternative to say, here's the Windows play here.
Now, correct me on this, Mary Jo. Windows 10X was originally announced as the operating system for the Microsoft Surface Neo.
That's
which
right.
Was the Windows dual screen device, as opposed to the Duo, the smaller device that runs Android.
Yeah.
My feeling after using the Duo was that it felt like two different families in the same house, you know, like not talking to each other. And I think that if they would have come out with 10X and Neo first, the Duo Neo thing, I have to stop and think every time.
Me too. No, you know what the trick is? Duo has a D and Android has a D.
Oh, that's so obscure. That doesn't
that's
work
my
for
trick.
Me.
Okay, that's my
personal
trick.
You guys are really
trick.
In the weeds now.
We are. At any rate, so I do want to ask you, so the Neo, I think that looks like a cool device. Is that just dead?
If it ever comes to market, yeah. So Microsoft said the reason it wasn't coming to market was because during the pandemic, people had priorities, and their priority was to go with a known form factor that was tried and true, like a clamshell laptop or a two-in-one, and nobody really wanted a dual screen Windows device if that could be their only PC that they could buy. I don't know if I buy that that's why they didn't ship it when they said they were going to, or if it's just a convenient COVID washing kind of excuse. But yeah, so Neo, we hear it hasn't been completely canceled. We think it still could show up maybe in 2022. It probably will be an evolved form factor at that point, a dual screen Windows 10 device. Maybe running 10X, running some kind of variant of Windows 10. But yeah, I agree with you. I was more excited about the Neo at first than I was about the Duo. The Neo was Courier, Microsoft Courier, right? Remember that old device?
When Duo came out, I emailed Jay Allard.
You did?
Yeah, he didn't email back. I was kind of bummed.
Surprising. Yeah, I agree with you a bit on the Duo too. Like I'm an Android phone user. And so I thought, oh, this isn't going to be a big adjustment for me, but it was.
Likewise. Same. Yeah. Same.
Yep.
The peg for this whole discussion was earnings, and Microsoft basically killed it.
Oh man, they did.
Revenue was up 17% to more than $43 billion. Profits were up 33% to $15.5 billion. All of this was way ahead of what expectations were.
Yep.
It just seems like they're perfectly positioned right now for what's going on in the world.
You know, we always joke about every earnings call, they start out with great quarter, guys. I actually said that on a call to somebody because I was like, it was a great quarter. I'm like, great quarter, guys. Then I'm like, did I just say that?
At least you recognize, at least you're self-aware.
I am self-aware.
As long as it wasn't the lead on your story.
No, although that could have been really funny, right?
That, could have been a funny
that would have been hilarious.
So what I always do on earnings, I don't know if you do this, but I go back and look at the transcript for little hidden clues, right?
Ooh.
Like things you didn't really notice when they were saying them. And then later it just jumps out at you like, oh my gosh, how did I miss that? So you know what came up a couple times is the term business process. And that's kind of shorthand to me for like the Dynamics and Power Platform suite, you know, everything they're doing in the software as a service space. And so Satya talked about it a couple times. I think Amy talked about it once, and one of the analysts asked about it expressly. So I'm like, you know what? The way they answered it, I feel like there's something big coming, and I don't know if it'll be at Ignite, you know, their big show that's coming, part two of Ignite coming in early March, or if it'll come before that. But I feel like there's something coming where they're trying to make the case that there's not three clouds anymore, Azure, Office, and Dynamics. There's one. There's just one, and it's tied all together, and that people can buy it. If you buy into Microsoft Cloud, you're buying in all across, like the entire set of services, and not just separate silos, if that makes any sense.
Is that essentially what Microsoft 365 aspires to be? That brand? That brand is always, it's hard to wrap your head around.
Yeah, so Microsoft 365, I think about that more as a way to make Windows sold as a service than anything else. But I feel like this is more a case of we've got the front office workers, we've got people in manufacturing, we've got all these services that kind of bridge across the front office, the back office, and the factory floor. What if we could sell our products that way in a single understandable, at least partially understandable, set of services that look like Microsoft Cloud, right? Instead of having like, you have to know what Dynamics is, you have to know what Power Platform is and Office 365. Like, that's a lot to assume people will understand. I can barely understand it. And this is all I do for my job, right? So I'm like, yeah, it would be cool if Microsoft Cloud actually meant something. And what it meant was one set of services that span your entire front office to back office to factory floor, and you buy them that way.
I'm with you on that, Mary Jo. And in fact, in some of their past advertising, like their race car, NASCAR advertising, they've referenced Microsoft Cloud. And I always went like, and
what is that, right?
Yeah. I think at the time it tended to be like Dynamics and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I would second what you would say, and I would take it one step further. What would be the poker thing? Anyway.
You raise me? I raise you.
I'll raise you, Azure functions. Because I think if you take what you just said and you put serverless computing, this idea of consumption-based computing, automated tasks that you're not paying for a server in the cloud, you're paying for individual actions. AWS Lambda is their counterpart to this, and Google has their own, which I can't remember the name of. And I think if you combine all of these services and you have them zip, zip, talking back and forth, you know what you could call it? Do you know what you could call it? Hailstorm.
Ooh, I think they own that trademark, don't they?
Wow, we are so in the weeds on this. This is awesome.
I know we are.
That was shout out 2000. 2000, I think, was when Hailstorm came out.
You know who broke that story?
Me. You? Nice. Mary Jo, this has been fun. I could go on forever, but we need to let you go and get on with your evening there.
No, thanks.
Mary Jo Foley is a tech journalist. You can follow her on the All About Microsoft site at ZDNet. Read her book, which still is relevant, I think, Microsoft 2.0.
It's more than 10 years old, which is hilarious now.
It's still the Postgates era. That was the classic. That was the beauty of that subtitle. also, Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott. And Paul's great. Even if his time is limited there now that I've staked my claim.
I'm going to tell him you said that.
Mary Jo, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd. Thanks, John.
Good to see you.
Thank you for listening to GeekWire. Our podcast producer is Kurt Milton. Our theme music is by Daniel L.K. Caldwell. To see all of GeekWire's coverage of science, tech, business, and more, go to geekwire.com and sign up for our daily email newsletter to receive all of our stories. Until next time, I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
Thanks for listening to GeekWire.